Logic. You're listening to The Sweet Spot with myself, Mike Alexander, and Alex Remizowski. How are we doing today, Alex?
What's up? Pretty good. Getting ready for a kind of a boring week, heading into a couple real good weeks. So just trying to forget about last week a little bit and move forward and take advantage of one of these seemingly boring tournaments, but I kind of love these personally.
Yeah, we saw this, you know, prior to the Masters. It's your typical week before a bigger event kind of deal. So smaller field. Some people got some stake in the game, though. They got something to play for, trying to get into the Open, the U.S. Open. We'll talk about it in a second. There's some people who might be not even playing this week that had entered because they have qualified. But let's do a little talk about last week. It was a really weird week. I saw you tweeting it out. You know, I had a lot of lineups with six made golfers too, and didn't even like sniff cut lines, which is kind of crazy.
Really
tough week.
You look at the – even just how things ended up, how they were after Saturday really especially, it was interesting to see that kind of like the not-so-big names ended up rising to the top on Sunday and maybe late Saturday. But if you look at the top, like if you stop yourself at T23 of where people finished, you got Justin Rose, Justin Thomas, Rory, Dustin Johnson, Ricky Fowler – Tony Finau, Matt Kuchar, Henrik Stenson, Phil Mickelson, Hideki, Tiger, like all in the top 23. So it really came down to more of like a DraftKings scoring or fantasy points and birdies and consecutive birdies and eagles and the little things that set you apart, I think, if you were able to put a lineup of six of six together without like, say, Adam Hadwin, who kind of disappeared into the abyss by Saturday or whatever. So it was tough. It was very tough to cash in GPPs. I think it's where a little element of luck had to kind of come in there.
Yeah, weird kind of shape of the tournament. You know, the first day was kind of tough, but then Friday and Saturday things softened up and got, you know, pretty scoreable. Guys were getting after it. At least the bigger names were. It was allowing them to put a lot of negative numbers up, and then on Sunday it went away and some of those guys reversed course, like a guy like Leishman, who, you know, came roaring back on Saturday and gave it away on Sunday.
There were a few definite disappointments there. Like I had a little stake in Grillo. I actually had some in Ben On, as I believe I mentioned last week. I was trying to think when we did the little one and done at the end there, I feel like I either said On or DeChambeau, but I could be totally making that up. But if I did, props to me.
I don't remember which one you actually went with.
I know. I wanted to like go back and listen, but I don't like doing that. So whatever. Yeah. We'll pretend I went with that. I think something worth pointing out that I talked about a little bit today in our Slack chat. If you go back and look at strokes gained approach over the last 24 rounds, which is a stat I was really trying to focus in on last week, you got Bryson DeChambeau right up at the top there, along with so many of these other guys that were up there. And really our model was pretty good there. I was kind of going through man by man there. And like we had Justin Rose at the very, very top. And he finished in T6. And you got Justin Thomas. Those are two names that you kind of expect to be up there. But then you got Bryson shortly, like just behind them. We were on a little. Phil was up there too, actually, and I was not on him at all. And he ended up having a good Sunday. 2 of 4 rounds good. So I think we were on to quite a bit last week. You just really had to fit the pieces together perfectly to have success last week.
Yep. So, yeah, you've got to pick it up this week, get back at it. For me, it was kind of a week that it felt like with the big field, I wanted to stay more on a cash game focus, which I did, and still came out behind because of, you know, like you said, the chalk hitting and all that. So, probably going to take a similar approach this week, just try and stick to the basics.
I would agree with that. Maybe there's a lot to think about this week. I think there's money to be made if you stay on top of the news and kind of take it a step further than the casual average players will actually be focusing in on. I think that's going to give you a huge advantage, but I wish I did that last week. I actually went probably above average hard last week, and it got pretty ugly, I gotta say. Kyle Stanley, what's up with that? Kyle Stanley and Patrick Cantlay, those were like the two. I was on DeChambeau a little bit. I had lines with DeChambeau in it that either just cashed or didn't cash. And then Stanley, who I just trashed and said I'll never, ever trust the guy. Of course, the sharps are on him and he does okay. And then Cantlay coming off the missed cut. I said, no thanks, and bam, he's there all week.
That's how it happens.
But yeah, I think we got some things to think about this week that we'll get into.
All right, so let's do a little greenskeeping here. Then I'll talk a little bit about the Open qualifying, and then you can hit the course.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, so first off, if you're not subscribed to the Patreon tier for the golf content, go ahead and do that. You're going to get the cheat sheet, the model that Alex was just talking about. It's going to be an Excel sheet. You're going to get to see everything we're looking at, helping us make decisions for the week. That's the engine that you want to put in your car. So go over there, Patreon.com/lineuplogic. Sign up for the golf content. Second thing I want to note, Yahoo Daily Fantasy has added golf. So it's going to be interesting. It's their typical fantasy format, which uses a $200 budget and then pricing in the $10 through $50 range. It's going to be interesting to see how the first week goes. I can't remember ever being part of the first week of golf anywhere. Maybe FanDuel, but
I was just thinking that I saw this online and it was very intriguing to me. I'm like, if you get in there early, there might be some benefits to that.
Yeah. I can't decide. Obviously I think sharps are going to have seen this news. Like they spend time researching, they're plugged in, they're going to know this is happening. So is it going to just be a bunch of, top feeders just taking each other apart, or is it going to be an untapped market of people who play daily fantasy on Yahoo, which maybe there is some segment. They've done a lot with baseball this year, so there could be some people whose attention it's catching. A new place to play. I've got a little bit in there from baseball because I've been playing in their head-to-head matchups. What they call quick match. Let me take a quick look here. So they are doing it for golf too as well. So they've got this thing called quick match. It is a head-to-head matchup with no rake, which is nice. They will match you with a skill-based opponent, and you can only do one per value tier. So you can do a $1 game, a $2 game, a $5 game, a $10 game, and a $20 game. That's it. So you can't play 100 entries. But, you can put almost, $50 in play with no rake. That's better than paying, 10% or 15% in cash games somewhere else. So check that out if you are interested. And if you have any questions about specific Yahoo pricing, you can hit us in the Slack chat.
Yeah, I think maybe we can regroup on that. I'm definitely going to check it out if I can remember my Yahoo password.
All right, so that's the greenskeeping. The U.S. Open qualifying. Let's dig into that. I've spent a few minutes here trying to sort out what's what. So basically, you know, like any big golf tournament, there's this convoluted list of people who qualify, past champions, past Masters champions, past PGA champions, scores, this, that, exemptions, all kinds of stuff. You know, you need a legal degree just to figure out who's playing in a golf tournament these days. But here's some people who had not qualified just yet coming into this week. Some notable names: Adam Scott, Keegan Bradley, Stuart Sink, Kevin Na, Patton Kizzire, J.B. Holmes, Steve Stricker, Billy Horschel, Scott Piercy. Those are the big ones. So today being Monday, June 4th, all over the world there is sectional qualifying, two big ones being in Columbus, Ohio and Memphis, Tennessee. They had about 10 spots up for grab each. There was, I think, 80 total spots through all the qualifiers throughout the world. So some guys who got in through these two, Adam Scott made it, Keegan Bradley made it, Shane Lowry made it, which I didn't mention him, Sharma made it, Ali Schneider-Jans made it, my boy Sam Burns made it, Steve Stricker made the cut, Scott Piercy made the cut, Aaron Wise made the cut.
And these are all names we're going to see this week, by the way.
A lot of these are names. So the implication here is one of the ways you can qualify for the U.S. Open is being top 60 in the official world golf rankings. So if you didn't make this qualifying and you didn't have another exemption, you might need to play this week and play well to bump your ranking. And one guy who's right there on the line that didn't get through the qualifying is Patton Kizzire. So he's got something extra to play for this week. These other guys, the risk there is that they may withdraw prior to the tournament, which is good. I don't think they would start the tournament unless, like, Steve Stricker, you know, obviously last time we saw him, he was clutching his back like crazy. He's older. I don't think I'd go anywhere near him, even if he decides to play. It's just a huge liability. Unless you're into that kind of thing and you know, you would rather fly close to the sun. So you're going to have to keep your eyes open as the week goes. You know, these guys may see how the body feels. They played 36 holes today, which is, you know, hard to do on any given day, let alone coming out of a tournament for a lot of them. They've got to play practice rounds if they're going to play this week and then play 72 more holes. So keep an eye out. One more notable guy, J.B. Holmes. I don't know what happened with him. He withdrew after his first round. I don't see anything anywhere detailing an injury, anything like that. So we'll just have to update in Slack or on Twitter as the week goes and we get some more info on him, because he's another guy who, you know, with a good finish could get himself into the U.S. Open. Yeah, Adam Scott, keep an eye on him. He may withdraw. Keegan Bradley, possibly. Steve Stricker's the big name there that you really need to keep an eye on. I think guys like Scott Piercy, Aaron Wise, they're probably going to lace him up this weekend.
Have you heard anything about James Hahn? He has not been playing very well, but he is kind of on the border there of the top 60. He's not in the top 60, but he's, you know, close behind. And
I don't see him in these two bigger qualifiers.
Yeah, I guess, you know, like, I mean, I don't really care all that much, to be honest, because I don't think I'll be playing him one way or another, but there's obviously some
he's not to keep already exempt. There's a couple guys who did not play in qualifiers. I guess they're just, they don't think they've got the energy for it or something, but like I couldn't find Kevin Na's name. It's hard to to find these all, because you got to go through 11 different tournaments. And, you know, I think just waiting as the week goes, you'll find out who has something to play for. But so guys like Na and Han may have a little extra skin in the game.
Yeah, I think there'll definitely be like news out there that is accessible to all of us. And anything that we find, we're obviously going to relay along. So just be on the lookout and just know that it's happening. Just killed a spider right next to me. So that was fun. And yeah, I mean, I think it's like I said earlier, I think knowing these things and keeping an eye on them and staying up to date this week is going to be one of those small things that can set you apart from a lot of other players. If there's a significant withdrawal or anything of that sort coming into this tournament, or someone you think you should be weary of who ends up withdrawing after a round, if you stay away from him and that actually happens, that could it could really make a difference. As we all know, every little thing counts in daily fantasy. So I think stay close to it, and we'll stay close to it. And I know you've done your research, and I will definitely be doing the same.
All right, so why don't you hit us with the course breakdown for TPC Southwind? Going to be in the Midwest here this week for a golf tournament.
Yep, so it's the FedEx St. Jude Classic at TPC Southwind, heading out to Memphis, Tennessee. It's a tricky little course. It's a par 70. 7,200, just over 7,200 yards. So not the longest, but it is a par 70, which is a little interesting there. This tournament's been around again for a long time, since 1958, which is pretty crazy, formerly known as the Memphis Open. Things are going to change next year. It's going to be in a WGC event. So that's going to be a big change if you're considering how long this event's actually been in place, played during this week in the season. So we're going to be saying goodbye to the WG Bridgestone, which is a special event close to my heart. Love that tournament, but hey, it's going to be gone, and we're going to keep seeing this course year to year. And I think they probably like that because it is ranked up there on one of the more difficult courses on tour. Honestly, looking at this course, it reminds me a lot of last week at Mirfield Village, and it's not quite the same in the fact that Mirfield kind of had it was a lot of hills, a lot of undulation, and kind of just more shape to the landscape in general. But we're talking something that's not all that long, but when you really drill down and look, you have a par 3 that's over 225 yards long. You have 12 par 4s, 7 of them which are over 450 yards long. And then you only have 2 par 5s. So that's pretty unique there. I think we'll be looking at some par 4 scoring, some long par 4 scoring. 94 bunkers, 10 water hazards. So like water is coming into play a lot. Yeah, if you're actually looking at the course, you see a lot of that water around the greens, near the greens, where errant approach shots will almost always get you in trouble, whether it's sand or water, which is one of the things that really reminds me of last week. That, like I said, Bryson DeChambeau was right up top in strokes gained approach. Guess who won? Bryson DeChambeau. It kind of makes sense. Yes, you have to keep the ball into a place where you have a clear approach into the green. So I'm going to be looking strongly at strokes gained approach again this week. It's not the longest course again. But something I did actually find interesting is if you look at past winners and runner-up and just people who have fared well in general at this course in the past, you got Daniel Berger, who's won it the past 2 years. So he clearly likes the course. He can hit the ball a long way. You got Fabian Gomez, Ben Crane, Harris English hits the ball a long way. Dustin Johnson, Lee Westwood. These are all names who generally can bomb it off the tee. And then if you're looking at some of these runner-ups, you got Brooks Koepka in 2016. But you also have Mickelson and Stricker, who aren't necessarily known for the distance, especially not Stricker. in 2016, at least. Phil Mickelson again in 2013. So it's kind of a mix, but it is interesting that you see some of these, quote, bombers actually winning here. So it's going to be another one of those weeks that you kind of got to look at it both ways. I think it's definitely an accuracy course. You see off the fairways, there's a lot of trees. It's like nearly tree-lined fairways. Very similar to last week. So, I mean, I think I'm probably going to be leaning towards accuracy here. Definitely approach, but also looking at strokes gained off of the tee and then scrambling too for, you know, when you do have an errant tee shot or find yourself someplace that isn't necessarily the fairway in the green. I think that's pretty much what I've got. The cut line has, again, kind of reinforcing the fact that this is going to be a pretty difficult course, as it always is. The cut line's been +1 to +3 over the past 5 years. Again, similar to last week. So I think we're going to have to stay on top of news here and focus in on some of these stats. I'm looking at approach off the tee, scrambling, greens and regulations, and then some par four scoring. And I think that should bring us to what we're looking for here.
Yeah, the most interesting thing for me is the water being in play. I saw somebody saying that over the last few years, the most balls lost to water happened here. So some guys are going to put up some doubles. You want to be careful. Who are a little bit reckless or aggressive.
That's actually pretty crazy if you think about. I'm trying to think where the Honda Classic was played, where you had the wind and just people, the bear trap there.
Right.
Where it was like player after player after player just knocking them in the water. It was almost like, all right, I'm just going to hit this ball and it's going to go in the water and then I'm going to go up there and drop and hopefully get a bogey. So like that shows that it could be a difficult course. I think we talked about weather looks like it's going to be pretty decent. It's going to be warm, but nothing too crazy other than that. So I think birdies gained, bogeys avoided, two other things I want to look at too.
Yep. So that's what we're dealing with this week. Let's jump in at the top. There are some bigger names in this tournament. Then it thins out pretty quick, but we got five in the 10+K tier. You got Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Phil Mickelson, Henrik Stenson, Daniel Berger. Like you mentioned, Berger with some of the performance in the past year, pushing him up. Who do you like here?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is obviously an enticing range for what we're looking at here, especially at this point in the season. I think you need to keep in mind that next week is a major. It's the U.S. Open. People are trying to get ready for that. You see Dustin Johnson, if you go back to 2015, I think he withdrew after one round, which is interesting because that kind of shows us what we're going to be looking at this week. So
right.
If he goes out and fires four over on Thursday, some people might say, screw it. And like,
right, rest up.
I'm done with this. I'm going to go rest up, get my practice in for the major where I actually want to win here. So Dustin Johnson, I mean, it's just week after week. I have the same thing to say about him. He is just a step above everybody else, especially in this field. So you just can't doubt that he's going to do anything worse than a top 10. But at the same time, you have to take that price into consideration, take into account the fact that we're going to do a major next week, and he's shown us really, I guess, how he feels here just two, three years ago. So he finished fifth in 2016. He's had success here. One of the names that really stands out to me is Brooks Koepka, who I've been wanting to be on since we saw him follow up the Players Championship Sunday that I wasn't buying with yet another good result, finishing second in Texas. So I'm very interested in him, but I think other people might be too. And suddenly, bam, we're looking at 11,000, which is really unfortunate because I was hoping to get in there a little early and maybe catch him at a little more of an affordable price.
You know, I'm kind of glad because I feel like anything below 11,000, and I mean, he's already going to be a little chalky. He would have just been super chalk. So this kind of protects that a little bit and keeps him playable, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I think people are going to probably see that price and maybe think, kind of what I said, like I wanted to play this guy, but this is maybe asking a bit much. And then especially in a field like this, the value is it's hard to come by once if you're talking like a 7,200 or less, you're looking at some names you might have never seen.
Right. Definitely tough to build a lineup starting with one of these two guys.
Yeah. It's going to be tough to do, but I think it's going to be possible. But if we're looking at some of his stats over those past couple starts, he's definitely up there. I think I've always said Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka are similar type players. Both have had success here, especially Brooks. I mean, 4 years in a row, he's done pretty well, pretty much. Without 2017, he's finished top 20 3 years in a row, and two of those were a T2 and a T3. So can't really argue with that. And it's Phil Mickelson, next one down, in a very similar situation. And he's coming off a pretty decent week there. Like I said, these are all kind of enticing options. I'm not one to normally pay this price tag for Phil Mickelson either. How do you feel about Phil?
I think he's going to be a little chalky with his course history. You know, anything you can grab onto this week, people are going to pop it into their lineup. I don't love his recent form.
I mean, you know, we're going to be seeing him at the U.S. Open, obviously. So
right, that too. You know,
then again,
he's definitely a guy.
5 years in a row.
Yeah, he's at a point in his career where, a withdrawal for no reason just doesn't bother him, or, you know, there's a little bit of risk there if you get too heavy on Phil.
Yeah, I feel like that's unlike Phil, but at the same time, it would make sense. But just seeing that he's played here 5 years in a row, he likes it. And it's always the week before the U.S. Open, like...
Yeah, I guess he figures he's going to be playing for golf. Playing golf for money somewhere anyway, so he might as well do it.
That's a very good point. He'd probably be, off doing his own thing, playing 36 holes a day. So I don't know. I don't hate Phil here. 10-6 is a much better price than Dustin Johnson at 11-7. I think I'll wait to see maybe some of this U.S. Open news, some of the news surrounding some of these guys, and then ownership. But I'd say in these top three, I'd be more apt to play Phil Mickelson or Brooks Koepka. And kind of wait. I think Brooks probably wants to get the reps in before the U.S. Open. Like, he's still pretty still pretty fresh here.
I was pretty surprised to see his name. You know, I would have thought you would want the time off and heal up more. But I guess he's come out of the gates firing, so the injury doesn't seem to be affecting him at all. So I that's probably his thinking, is the more I can play going into it, the better I'm going to be.
Yeah, I mean, judging by his swing the past, like the second place at Fort Worth and then 11th at the Players with the ridiculously amazing Sunday round, like it just doesn't look like he's being bothered by it. But it's one of those things that's it's very hard to predict because you just never know if kind of Brooks and Phil both, depending on what they do on Thursday, could really affect how their attitude, their overall attitude on Friday, or if they even choose to play Friday. So it's like a whole nother aspect coming in this week. But I think they're both worth a gamble, but it is a gamble, especially at their asking price there.
Yep. Any love for Henrik?
I always have love for Henrik. Like, honestly, like, he's a dude that I feel like if he's in there, he's...
Yeah.
He's going to be in the mix, and I don't see him trying to take any shortcuts. Like, I don't know if it's just, like, something about him. I don't know. He's always in there. He's the accurate guy that you're looking for here, but... Yeah, and he's not. It's not like he's an old guy or anything like that. And he was playing just fine last week. He was right in the mix. He didn't do anything bad by any means.
No.
I want to see what his real quick what his four rounds were actually at, because I know I went pretty heavy on him actually last week.
Yeah, so did I.
I was just thinking about
had a bad
so many other right? things like yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, a bad Saturday being a 72, right. which is...
But on a course where people were putting up, minus 5, minus 7.
Yeah, yeah. So we went 66-72, but it does seem to be that the second round was really most of the low scores for the week went up on Friday. So Henrik Stenson is right in there, in my opinion. I think he's always a good play. Again... He hasn't played here since, I think, 2012, so we got nothing on him over the past 5 years, which is interesting. So 10-4, again, just like as we go down here and you still got these names, I think he's the lowest of, I would kind of say, Henrik, Phil, Brooks, DJ are the elite players of the crew here. And then we drop off into a whole nother world with kind of Daniel Berger being the transition into that other world.
You going to play any Berger?
I feel like I got it. You know, I'd say watch the ownership. I'd probably try to match the ownership. If you're building multiple lineups here, I'd probably try to match the ownership. He's coming off of a bit of a break here. He hasn't played since the Players, which is totally fine with me. He came in T57 at the Players, and before that T55 at Wells Fargo. But before that, he was doing just fine. It's like the guy finishes. He has a lot of good results, but not very many wins. I think these are his only two wins in his PGA Tour career. So we know what he's capable of, and this is the place to play him, if anywhere. So. If you're looking at a 15% owned Daniel Berger, I'm definitely good with that. The guy's been doing his thing. I'm sure he's been practicing and shaping up for this into the US Open. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I just keep thinking, like, what are the chances a guy who's a good golfer, but, you know, not one of the great golfers in the world, wins a tournament 3 years in a row? And like, if you're not prime Tiger Woods, that just doesn't happen very often.
Oh yeah,
that doesn't mean he can't finish, you know, top 5, top 10, still be a solid
player. Yeah, 10,000, I think you, in this field, I think you want him top 5, but you could see it happening. It could.
Yeah, be a fun story.
I'm not counting him out. Yeah, and I'm always a Berger guy though, so I guess I'm kind of biased here. He's kind of like a Ricky Fowler to me, only. Like the lesser talked about Ricky Fowler. Everybody likes Ricky Fowler, but
right.
Daniel Berger is a guy who I'm always expecting to be right in there, but you'll usually get him at a discount, and he's usually ends up somewhere in the mix. It's pretty rare that he like really does less than average or misses cuts and whatnot. So I like him at 10,000.
He's a guy who takes care of the ball.
40% owned,
around the water. He's not a guy you have to worry too much about putting it in the drink.
Yeah, yeah. So ownership will be big for me there. I'd like to to watch that going forward. We got a few days here, so I'll think about that one. And then I think dropping down under 10K is where shit's going to get wild.
Yeah, there's not a lot in the nines here. Any names? I like Finau at 9-3.
I would expect him, if I had one guess of someone that's going to be chalky this week, it would be Tony Finau at 9-3.
Yep.
Just because of his price and his name, and he's always a DFS favorite, and he's 9,300 in this field. I think you can easily fit him in lines. He's a trusted player. I think he'll do fine this week, and I think he's a good play. But if he's again 30% owned, that's going to change things a little bit. In the other guy, Billy Hershel, who I just never want to play. He's played here 4 times in the past 5 years and finished top 10 every time. And he's also been randomly playing very well this year until his miscut last week.
Yeah. That's, he lost that magic he had found after the Masters.
I like that take. I think I'm going to stay away from him. I think that price tag is just too much for someone of his caliber.
But he also had to play in the qualifying, and he did not make it through. So he might have something more to play for, but he's also a guy who's going to have played a lot of golf.
Yeah, that is actually interesting. So he's actually sitting in 86th in the overall world golf ranking. So a top 10 here could possibly throw him up into U.S. Open territory. That's interesting. You might have a little bit to play for here. How do you know how he actually fared in his qualifier?
Let me see if I can find it here.
Because if he was like right on the edge there, and he's playing decent golf, and now has something to play for here, and this is his last shot, I could see that maybe being some motivation. Then again,
72 and then withdrew. So I think he realized, he was pretty far off the pace.
Yeah.
And was not going to be going through. You know, like that, the scores are like low 60s, mid 60s.
Yeah. Like our,
in the first round,
a guy Burns 62. Was that the same one?
Yeah. He was a 62. He won the qualifier. Yeah. He took first. Good to see. You know, I'm glad he's going to be in the Open. He's an interesting story. And
take it first there too. That's pretty awesome. Yeah. I like him. I do. I hope he can.
He played like dog crap the last 2 weeks, so it's good to see him at least get back on track somewhat.
Yeah, and then we're gonna get a chance to see him next week. Hopefully, he can do something with it. So I guess I have that kind of reinforces that. It could go both ways. So you got Billy Hershel, who has been playing okay, kind of lost it, and is sitting pretty close to that top 60 mark for the U.S. Open. If he had a very good performance here, like he has 4 of the last 5 years at this course, it could put him over the edge. Maybe he withdrew to rest up and travel to this tournament. So something to think about. I am leaning towards the fade side pretty much due to price. Yeah,
he's too risky for me at that price. 9.7 is huge.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he is the sixth most expensive guy in the field. That's a little much for Billy.
I would much rather Stenson or Berger, you know, for $300 or $700 more. You can find that somewhere else.
Yeah, and with that said, I think there's also guys you can drop down to for sure here. So, Tony Finau being one of them. Three guys in a row here right below that I find all pretty interesting right now are Ben Ahn, who we were on a little bit last week. I am kind of mad at myself for not being on him more. I know I was talking about him, and I know I liked him.
Yeah, but like he's a guy that I do that too. I'm like, you know, that's a name I mentioned. That's a guy I circled in my research. But like, he's not a guy you should have been overweight on. You know, he did well. It's good if you owned any of them. But
yeah,
when you see like Henrik Stenson, we were both heavy on Henrik Stenson. Like, he's a great golfer, and there's a track record to pointing towards being heavy on him. If you go heavy on Benny Ahn, like, you're either crazy or you got a magic ball.
Yeah. Yeah. It's honestly like the Kyle Stanley. That still blows my mind that so many people were like, it's like Kyle Stanley and Danny Lee, like the two dudes who just, you can't trust ever. Yeah. And then people suddenly like Kyle Stanley and he makes the playoff at the end of the day. Like it was crazy to me. I've been on DeChambeau a lot, but anyways, we're moving past last week. I'm interested in him again here. 9,200 is affordable in this field. It's not going to be your best. It's not going to be my top play by any means, but like once we move a little further down, it's going to be few and far between of people that you're actually interested in. And there was a reason we were interested in him last week, and I think that reason holds true once again here. Like I said, they're relatively similar courses in the fact that there's water and sand. It's not the longest course in the world, but you're going to have to keep it straight. You're going to have to know the course, and you're going to have to get birdies. And he did that last week. And if he can do it again, I think he's going to fare just fine. 9,200, pretty reasonable. Keegan Bradley, another name I was pretty interested in last week, and he did quite all right. He never got that surge to kick him into the range that some of these mm-hmm. other names did, but he's still very interesting to me. Remind me, he's still in the US Open?
He played in the qualifying, and he did qualify, I believe.
Okay. All right. So another name that, to me...
Watch the withdrawal.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So that could, it could go either way here. Keegan's made enough money in his short career so far. It's not really short. I shouldn't say short, but I don't think he's playing for it like some other people might be playing right. for it. Like Joaquin Niemann at 8,900, who has been, man, this dude, I am super into him. He can get mm-hmm. birdies like a mofo. I want to play him. It's like Sam Burns and Joaquin Niemann are like the two rookies that I am yeah. fully on board with and want to see succeed in the PGA Tour. And I think they both have the talent too.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, love the story. Fun kid. This week, it's just everybody's going to want to play him. So, like, I wouldn't fade him fully, but... it's a good price. He's got the two top tens coming in. It's a depressed field. Like, he's going to be chalky.
Yeah, he's almost, like, 3 for 5 in terms of, like, one, making cuts, but it seems like every time he makes a cut, he's, like, up there pretty much top 10. He was... fully in the mix for half the day Sunday and then didn't quite make it. I think he did make quite a bit of noise in the community and pretty much anyone who watches the PGA Tour. So I think I agree with that. And now he's got a little something to live up to. So if he's going to be chalky, which is quite likely, like I was also going to say 8,900 is a lot for a guy that, you know, could be in it, but likely won't actually do what he needs to do on a Sunday. And you can't fault him for doing what he did last week. Like, it was his, like, he doesn't have any experience with pretty much being near or in the lead on a Sunday. Like, he didn't do that bad either. So it's a price.
And the other thing to remember is you know, he's from Chile. He's not, you know, a kid who grew up in the States and is familiar with these courses, has gotten exposure, has maybe played them, you know, in some amateur events, things like that. He's learning all of these golf courses as he plays them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So take caution. I think he's an interesting guy to watch, but for DFS purposes, I think you're very right about that. I think he could be very popular, and you got to watch the price tag here.
Right. A great draft.com play, you know, a guy, you can get him and own him exclusively.
Yeah.
You know, with a second or third pick.
Yep. Yeah. So I guess moving on, we talked about Stricker. Be weary. He's done well here before. He's been very consistent this year for the few tournaments he's played. It's always interesting, but I never play him, and I probably won't play him this week either because there's just that little added risk now. And that basically brings us into the lower eights. I guess we have to mention someone I was actually on a little bit last week was Charles Howell. I finally decided, you know, Charles Howell's been doing a little something. Maybe I should play him. And he didn't end up doing all that great with a T65. But if I remember correctly, he was actually in. He was in it for a little while there.
Yeah, not on the fringe, you know.
Yeah,
74 on Sunday hurt him.
Okay, yeah, 74 Sunday. So he's interesting to me. How is his course history? I just lost my spot here looking for that. Yeah, so he's got the experience here. He's gained strokes in his past 5 years. He got cut in 2015, but other than that, it's decent. But again, 8,600. You kind of have to start looking at this in terms of this field this week rather than Charles Howell, 8,600. What's going on here?
Right.
Two people.
Yeah, I like him a lot as a cash play.
Yeah, I agree with that.
He's going to play 4 days.
He's going to play 4 days. I think it's I would put money on that one. Do you feel anything about Knox? Because I know the next few names are – talking points.
Not really. I mean, he's fine.
Yeah. Like,
if you see some reason to play him, like this is the kind of week that sure played literally anyone below, you know, 8,500 or, you know, right here at 8,500 area. Like,
yeah. Do you feel anything?
They could
Knox?
Absolutely.
Do you feel anything about
what's that?
Do you feel anything about Russell Knox? Do you feel anything for Chris Kirk? Same answers last week and the week before.
Yep. They are the same golfer. The one guy, though, that is – well, two guys are a little bit interesting here. Peter Uihlein had a really nice stretch here in May.
Yes.
Getting consistent. Two T5s and then a T21. On courses that require accuracy, and that's what we got again this week.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. I hope he's not that popular because it's hard to ignore what he's done lately. He has only played the course once in the past 5 years. That was last year, and he finished T78. So not much to talk about there, but what he's done lately is pretty attractive in terms of, especially in terms of this field. So I like him. And we keep talking about this price, but I mean, that's the price that I'd be willing to pay for someone who has been playing the way he's been playing. I'm trying to look up his, how he's statting out here. And it's, you know, he's pretty much at least top 40 in approach, ball striking off the tee, and then he is also decent on putting on Bermuda green. So definitely someone to consider here, which actually leads me nicely into your boy Kiradek, who always stats out well on the Bermuda greens.
Yep.
So he'll be making some putts this week, and he's been playing very well.
Yeah, and he played in the States last week, so you don't have to worry about the jet lag factor.
Yep.
I mean, it's the kind of field where if he's going to get a PGA win in the early part of his career, that you figure it's going to be at a tournament like this. Because he plays over, you know, he goes to Asia, and he picks these tournaments off, you know, these weak fields, and he just crushes them.
Yeah, you know? So the dude knows how to win, and I remember the last time, one of the first few times we actually talked about him, he was coming off one of those wins, like just blowing the field away by like 8 or 9 strokes or something over in Asia. So this is the type of field to do it at. You know, you got some big names there up top, but I think he could compete with any of these people.
Anybody else in the eights before we go to the dreariness of the sevens?
I mean, Luke List is probably going to be someone I'll consider, but
I worry there's too much trouble. There's too much trouble on this course for Liz to get himself into, I feel like.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. Ryan Palmer scares me a lot too. He hasn't had that much luck here. He can put up some big numbers, so I don't like that. And then Harris English and JB Holmes I kind of put in the same category, but Harris English has obviously had a lot of success here. He's coming off of a T20 in Texas. So
I think didn't Harris English go to the university there in Tennessee? Let me look it up real quick.
That would be a very interesting fact there. He's gained 31 strokes.
He went to University of Georgia. Never mind.
Well, he's gained over 31 strokes on the field in his past five starts here, and that's with a missed cut in 2014 after his win. So, you know, defending champion gets cut 45-26-10. It's almost like he's maybe working his way back up there, and he's been a bit on and off this season, but he's had a couple decent finishes. Someone I could see myself firing up this week.
Right. Yeah, that about does it for the eights for me.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so guys that are in the sevens this week are either playing very poorly lately or are subpar golfers who are getting a bump. But picking through, give us some names down here that you're a little bit interested in.
All right. I definitely agree with that statement. Right up top, two guys it starts off with that I do like here. That is Patrick Rogers and Kevin Tway. Kevin Tway, I've kind of been on week in and week out here, and I think I'm going to stick with that. He can hit the ball quite a ways, and he's an accuracy guy. Like he can definitely have success at a course like this. We saw him play here last year, finished T31. He is coming off of a T65 last week. I think was he an MDF there? Quite possibly. What he did on Saturday, I know, was not very amazing. But anyway, his two starts before that in Texas, he finished T5 and T9. The guy at 7,800 just really stands out to me here. And Patrick Rogers is the other one. He was draining putts last week. He was right in there the whole time. He ended up, where did he end up finishing? Is he another Sunday casualty? I keep searching the wrong spot here for last week's finishes. He finished T8, 68-73, 68-68. So it was kind of the Friday where everyone went low that he didn't go low. So Rogers was someone who I played a couple of these type weeks. I remember the Corrales Punta Cana event. Like he was right up there the whole time. At I like Patrick Rogers kind of in general after what he's shown us the past, at least last week. And then you get him in a field like this, and I think he's someone who has potential. I think he could really – he's got the talent. He just needs to kind of take the next step here. And we've seen him up there before. It's like nothing new, but I feel like he does get kind of blended in there down with some of these guys because he is capable of some pretty awful finishes too. But right. I think if you're catching him on the right side of things here at 7,900 in a relatively weak field. So in the upper sevens, those are my two favorites, Kevin Tway and Patrick Rogers. Ollie, I'm just going to continue fading because still just not doing anything. Like, do you like Ollie at all?
So he's another guy who had to play in qualifying and he did qualify. Now, being a young guy, I doubt he's going to withdraw. it's not like he crushed it. He tied for 10th, which was the cut. But I don't know. Maybe that gives him a little confidence coming into the weekend. But yeah, I'm not too keen on Ollie, other than he's a decent price compared to the people around him.
Yeah. I mean, he's kind of got the name value above some of these guys, but if anything, that means people will be a little more interested in him when I don't think he deserves it for the way he's been playing lately. Right below him is Andrew Putnam, who I was proudly on a couple weeks ago, and he actually ended up working out for me. He was right up there. I think he might have been – he was top five after Thursday in his previous start, and I think he had one not so great round and then ended up coming back on Sunday. So like it, I guess I have a bias here because I liked him that week. In his four last starts, three of them, he finished T8, T42, and then T20 at Fort Worth. So he's been playing well, and he's a name that nobody thinks anything of at all. So I think you're going to get great ownership on him, but that's not really saying much down here in this grouping of players. I think ownership isn't going to be a huge thing to think about down here. All we see is a missed cut from him in 2015. So he's someone, I mean, 7,700 is a bit much for him, but then like you start looking below him and it's like, ooh, I don't know. I would almost be apt to jump down to Brant Snedeker. I know Braden Thornberry is his name's been being thrown around quite a bit here, finished T4 here last year, so he's invited back.
You're just going to gloss over Sneds like that?
No. The Sneds is actually below him on my list, so I wanted to fill in on anyone that I skipped.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because it's 7,600 for Snedeker. I mean, we got to talk about that.
Yeah, but. And also, if you notice, another 7,600 would be Ches Reavy. So two of my favorites at 7,600. And Ches, you know, they're both in the same boat for me. Like, I want them to do well. They're the guys who I would normally be like, hell yeah, do it up with these two here, but they've shown us little to nothing lately, and it makes it a little scary.
Like Sneds is sprinkling in one top 20 like here and there just to keep you holding on hope, so maybe it's this week. He's not on a great run, and I kind of feel like he owes me, so maybe I'll play him.
I mean, at 7,600, it's begging you to put him in your lineups, and then I don't know, cross your fingers. He's such a hard guy to predict.
Like, he has one great round and one meltdown round. You know, sometimes he misses one or the other. That'll result in either the good week or the really bad week.
Yeah, like maybe he'll put four together eventually.
Yeah.
If you look long term at Brant Snedeker on Bermuda Greens, he's actually, he's just gotten progressively worse. If you're looking at it over a 100 round time frame, he's eighth in the field. 50 rounds, you're looking at 20th in the field. 24 rounds, 34th. 12 rounds, 63rd. 8 rounds, 103rd. 4 rounds, 114th. It's like he's just getting worse and worse on Bermuda Greens, or he's just been putting worse and worse in general. But he used to be good.
I just think the wheels are coming off all over the place for him.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of confirms that thought for you. A bit scary, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Chez, I mean, that's someone I'll always look at a course that requires some accuracy like this. I don't think he's gone for good. Like, he'll be back and he'll be doing his thing. Something interesting about him, just searching him here on my list of Bermuda putting stats, he is statting out very, very well in his past 4, 8, and 12 rounds on Bermuda Green. So I'd like to know what that's actually taking into consideration here. I would imagine the Players, that's not Bermuda, is it? The Players is in Florida. That probably is Bermuda. So, I mean, he finished T30 at the Players. He missed the cut in Texas. Maybe we're back to his kind of golf course here. He's actually fared well here. Yeah, he came T4th here last year. Didn't play in 16, T12 and 15. Yeah, I'm fully on Chez. I just convinced myself right there. If I had to choose one out of like this 76, it's actually quite a few guys here. I like Chez.
Yeah.
Anyone?
Watch out for Shane Lowry withdrawing as well. He's in this tier and he did qualify. So.
Okay.
I could see him taking the week off.
I could definitely see that happening too. Is there anyone else you like in the mid sevens?
We mentioned Scott Piercy. He just missed in the U.S. Open qualifying. He actually tied for 10th. I guess he lost in a playoff. There was like 8 people at 7 under.
Just missed. I like that a lot, to be honest.
Yeah, like he played well and just missed. Like that's the best of both worlds. You know, he might have a chip on his shoulder thinking, I should have made that. Or it could go the other way on him and he could feel like, why am I playing right now? I should have been in and just melt down. Grayson Murray is in this tier. He had a really good opening round and then an 81 in his final round. So, like, anything's possible with him.
That's what scares me about the guy, and that's why I don't play him. I'm just going to throw a little something out there on Scott Piercy.
Okay.
For the past 24 rounds in terms of approach and ball striking, in this field, he is numero uno approach. This is the Bryson DeChambeau spot of last week.
There you go.
Number one in a strokes gained approach over the last 24 rounds. Number four in strokes gained ball striking, which obviously takes strokes gained approach into consideration, combined with strokes gained off the tee. So he is...
Save that sound. We're going to lead off the show next week with that clip.
Yes, I sure hope so.
All right, then the last guy we got to talk about for the week, Patton Kizire, 7,000 in this field. Did not make the qualifying, but he's right there. Needs to do a little something just to get himself into the Open. You think he can pull it out? I mean, you look at his history and cut, 64th, 74th. Like, that's bad.
Yeah, but and this is kind of like one of those things I sometimes say, like, he is one of those guys that he kind of became a different player in the last year. Uh-huh. So some of those cuts, you can maybe, discount there. But, are we talking about his recent play with the cuts?
Yeah, recent form.
Okay, all right. There's so many guys in this range. It's insane. This is like, honestly, a price range where you're going to have to, like, spend a minute looking through these guys because, like, you're going from 6,900 up to 7,200, like, so many freaking names. But I mean, with the recent form where it is for Kizire, that scares me quite a bit.
I mean, it's going to be, I'm curious to see what his ownership looks like because you know his name and he's 7K and he'll make stuff work. Like, you're going to have 7,100 left or 7,200 left. And you're going to browse and you're like, oh, I know Patton Kizire, plug him in, whatever. But I think obviously anybody paying attention is going to see how poorly he's played. The one thing I am interested in, though, is when the last time he played on Bermuda was, because at the WGC, he was 12th. The Honda, he got cut, but the Waste Management, he was tied 31st. I don't remember what those surfaces were, but I feel like some of that's got to be Bermuda.
Yeah, yeah. So he's looking at my little report here for Bermuda. He's up there long term. He's top 15 in the field putting on Bermuda. Over his last 24 rounds, 32nd, and it kind of drops off from there. So his last 4 and 8 rounds, which would be his last two tournaments on Bermuda, have not gone great, I would assume, mm-hmm. by those stats there. But before that, he's done quite all right. So that is,
yeah, I mean,
definitely interesting.
Maybe just one avenue into him doing well is he gets back onto Bermuda and figures a little something out with the putter. But it's
he's a Florida guy. Is he from Florida?
Is he?
I believe so. I don't know.
Alabama, from Alabama.
Alabama. All right. Well. Okay. Yeah. So, hey. It's definitely an interesting thought there. There's some other guys. Like I always say, once you get down into this range, you want to start. I personally want to start looking at some recent history. Joel Damon stands out to me. He's actually statting out very well. And it's kind of like Andrew Putnam for me a couple weeks ago, where you're like, oh, he's statting out pretty decent. And then you realize that his past three starts have been a T16, a T16, and a T20. And he finished T18 here last year. And it's like, whoa, he could maybe that all adds up to mean a little something there. So, like, someone to keep your eye on at 7,100. Another guy who I have a bit of a personal, my good friend, his cousin is Derek Fathauer, who is 7,000. And so I always kind of follow him on a week-to-week basis. I like to look, you know, just keep up to how he's doing. And he went through a very, very rough stretch, especially – like I'm looking at his past 5 rounds here. He had 3 cuts in a row, and they were pretty, pretty ugly cuts. And then out of nowhere, he came along with this T16 at the AT&T Byron Nelson. And that was, he had a good Thursday. He was like kind of right on the cut line on Friday. He ended up making over, and he just surged on the weekend. So that was interesting to see, and then he followed that up with another decent outing at that had to be in Texas, right? Yeah, the Fort Worth. So I think he kind of fell back a little bit on Sunday, but he was right up there then too. He has 2 very good years of course history here, and he's only 7,000. So like these are the kind of things I kind of like to look at around this range. Matt Jones is a name that popped into my head there. Abraham Answer. Always see his name on the leaderboard on Thursday and Friday, and then you kind of lose him. But someone to consider there. Another guy who's a decent tournament history and has been playing okay. Anyone else tickle your fancy down here?
No, that's it. It's bleak at the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got some work to do here, so. I'll be in the Slack.
I mean, then again, I mean,
share,
you know,
share any.
It's the kind of week where these guys who are typically cuts, you know, they're finishing tie for 100th. It's the week that they could be a top 20 play. You know, so get a dig in and see what the model says as far as ownership goes. You know, obviously, we don't have too much data yet on a Monday, but the names I think are going to be chalky. Berger with the tournament history, Finau. He should be more expensive than he is. Neiman, the recent form, people are going to want to play him. Down in the sevens, there's going to be one or two guys that are going to be 15 to 20%. I don't know who they're going to be looking at it. Going to have to see how it comes together. Yeah, not a ton of chalk this week. The guys at the top will obviously have heavier ownership just naturally in this small field. But all right, give us a one and done pick, Alex, to wrap it up.
You know, talking through this a little bit.
I mean, Keegan, that's a good one.
Keegan Bradley.
For me, anybody other, you know, if you haven't used Daniel Berger, which you probably haven't, like, this is the spot to put Daniel Berger into a one. I mean,
I mean, I was looking at him. I just didn't want to be,
definitely not the only one with him in there, but,
yeah, Keegan Bradley, I think, has been playing well. I think that could be an interesting choice here. I actually want to stick with this, these Scott Piercy numbers I was just looking at and ride the wave here. So Keegan Bradley and Scott Piercy are two very interesting names to me this week.
That's what we got time for today, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Alex, good luck this week. And we'll talk next time for the U.S. Open.
Yes, we will. Big major coming up. See everyone next week.